You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome, welcome, welcome. You're walking with me today. Down this road of life on Dr. Michelle Live. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You can call, text, you can email, you can log on, you can become friend of the show. I will tell you how to do all of those things. You can call or text anytime that we're live, 573-4BURRED-4. If you happen to have a landline, you dial 1-573-4BURRED-4. You can text, you can email, DM live at breadboxmedia.com, DM live at breadboxmedia.com. You can log on, look at our shows from last week, from last year, by going to breadboxmedia.podbean.com. And you can also become friend of the show by logging on to breadboxmedia.com. You can also check out all the other contributors. There's so many cool things going around. I was listening to one of the contributors yesterday. Oh my gosh, who was it? I think it was Mark Shea. And I was fascinated because he's got this mind, this scholarly mind that he devotes himself to a very to the literary and to the scholarly, and yet at the same time he's got a great sense of humor, so he's able to connect all kinds of great dots. And I thought, man, this is so enriching for me, because it's not necessarily something, if I didn't think, hey, I wonder what Mark Shea is saying today, I probably wouldn't have gone down the roads or been exposed to the authors that he talks about. And I may not have thought of things the way he thought of things. That's why we love each other. That's why we walked this road together. That's why we are all part of God's fabric. So on Friday, we were talking about the temperaments, the four ancient humors, and how they manifest in your world today, all the time. We're no different than the ancients. We are people. We have love. We have hurt. We have jealousy. We have anger. We have pain. We have sin. We have regret. We have error. We have joy. We have miraculous recoveries. We have amazing things happen in our life. We're also bioelectrical beings, as I have so often pointed out to myself, as with you too, realizing that the things that we consider just being normal, everybody has this, everybody does this, or we get into some kind of a mob psychology that, depending on what year it happens to be, what century it happens to be, that we repress everything, or we vomit everything out, or we live point to point, like little super balls in bathtubs, or we sit and ponder the sky. It depends on where on the earth you are and what year you are in. As we see with the temperaments, and I thought it was so beautiful, and I may start with that today, when Randy Rolf, I really don't know how to say her name, R-O-L-F-E, and we gave you a link if you want to check it out at breadboxmedia.podbean.com. We provided a link to her book, The Four Temperaments, A Rediscovery of the Ancient Way of Understanding Health and Character. It's not by any means a comprehensive view. I like to get things from all different viewpoints. There are many books written on the temperaments from Hippocrates' time, 400 years before Christ, to now. So, you know, whichever brand helps you, or you get little bits and little pieces. But the bottom line is that when in looking at even the concept of the humors and the temperaments, as we did last week, one of the most important things to take home is that when we broaden ourselves to an understanding that we as bio electrical beings can be funneled very easily through our high alert system, through our early warning mechanisms, through our conditioning, because we are natural beings. Just like if a flashlight goes off to the left, you're going to turn your head to the left. You will not be able to stop yourself. It is an instantaneous bioelectrical reaction. Boom, 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 boom. And there are trillions of scientific explanations for why that happens, beginning with what is a photon? What is a waveform? What is atmosphere? What is light? I mean, these things are just insane when you go to each and every tiny droplet of life. And so we sometimes have a tendency to take one little droplet of life and then make these huge conclusions. So as we are very easily led, I mean, we are bioelectrical beings. We have to be able to run, to sit, to sleep, to do whatever. That's what we are. We live on this earth. But we can also get really tunnel visioned. And so we tend to begin to think that whatever way we're born into is the way. So we do have our compartments that we love. We love the dreamer. I was introduced to a musician. What was his name? Justin Johnson, I think. I just only saw a little tiny bit when I was introduced on a YouTube. You can all Google him. I don't know where he's from. I've only heard a couple things. The reason I was introduced, he was playing blues on a shovel. He turned a shovel into an electric instrument. He also had a one string instrument that he had made, I guess, and carved and in the shape of a bone or something. And he was playing the slide guitar on that. And he was amazing. And you just think this human intuition, whatever he does in his life, he had long hair and he looked very young, maybe in his teens, and whatever had got him to be so expressive in that mode. Whatever he does in his daily life, probably went to school, probably goes to school, probably does what we all do. And here he is. So we love to look at that. But then at the same time, we want everyone to be super productive. So our whole world and our whole voting system and our whole medical system is about efficiency, 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 production, 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 fulfilled desire, fulfilled desire, fulfilled desire, instant success, instant success, instant success, instant notoriety. Whether you're on The Voice or whether you're on Dancing with the Stars or whether you're on Shark Tank or any of those things, I've seen each one of those, I think, once. But whatever, we tend to have that kind of mentality. And it's not new. We've grown up with that in the last maybe 50 years or so, especially with the advent and the ubiquity of television and electronics. And then now the explosion, everything is an instant Instagram, and a whole life is right there in front of your hands. Truth and not truth, right there in front of your hands. All you need is a snapshot and that's it. So when we look at the temperaments, and what I was going to open with in talking about this book, The Four Temperaments by Randy Rolfe, JD, MA, she's an attorney and a master's. I wanted to open up with what she said about Christ, because I thought that was an amazing and very interesting correlation with the Gospels actually depicting Jesus. He was embodying all four temperaments, and yet he was actually acting in a way that the different temperaments could accept him. So at the one hand, and we'll get that after the break. Well, I'll read to you that little scripture, or not scripture, but that little reference again after the break. But I think one of the take-home messages I want all of us to get is that it is not a one-way street, that when you are more balanced, you are more appealing to any of the imbalanced or the balanced. So in other words, if you are the choleric, as we talked about before, that kind of ancient, that's an ancient word for the temperament of the go-getter, the Bill Gates of the world, the person who just can't sleep. They're just always running. They're very smart. They're very out there. And they go. And I don't really know if Bill Gates is that way, but I'm just thinking of somebody who was super successful off the top of my head. So when we look at that, and if we are only that, we only engage that kind of those kind of people. We only funnel into that world. We turn off the more melancholic, or we have no tolerance for the more melancholic. And so I love the way she put, and we'll get that on the other side of the break, how she put the fact that in the four different gospels, they each looked at him almost from a different temperament, but at the same time showed how his actions underscored something that could be embraced by every temperament out there. Also, when we come back, we're going to dive into the quote, growing movement, unquote, of women who regret never having kids, and put that in with the temperaments. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
If you like what you hear on Dr. Michelle Live, please consider supporting the show by becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click Friend of the Show to provide your support today. Thank you. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're walking with me today in Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4. You can text, you can call, you can email me at dmlive, breadboxmedia.com. You can also become a friend of the show by logging on to breadboxmedia.com. So, and you can look at last week when we talked about the temperaments. We won't go into it completely today. I would really like to get into this concept because it is disturbing to me. And yes, it's the blip on the screen. Yes, it is a news story. When we talk about the mothers who regret having children, but there's something very disturbing about that. Not that there are mothers who regret having children. And not that everyone, some of the arguments always are, well, not everyone who has children should be mothers. Well, you know, really, that's so many of us do whatever we do that we end up not doing it very well. And there's always redemption for everyone. But the concern are things, headlines like inside the growing movement of women who wish they'd never had kids. And this really fits into a pigeonhole that I really want to bring up in this week. And that is our point of perception, our frame of reference, where we talk about these things. I've thought about that often. when we talk about how brave someone is to come out, let's say a political figure. I mean, political figures really, all bets are off. I mean, if you're a political figure, I cannot imagine one that I would automatically think, now there's an honest person. It doesn't go with the territory. There are certain things that seem to happen and certain things you have to compromise, it appears, in our political system. I could be completely wrong, and I don't think it has anything to do with party. It's just, but that's what it appears to be to me anyway. So there are certain things in life that we look at and we realize that there are perspectives. We celebrate the frame of reference of how I feel. So that people get celebrated for being very brave for admitting to their multiple affairs out in public with, let's say, a politician or a religious with family in whatever religion that admits that they're really interested in same sex and they've been carrying on in a same sex relationships for a very long time. It's not that realization does not help life. Of course it does. Truth will come out. Truth is important. But we look at the individual from the individual's point of view as they view everything else. And you somehow sidestep in your heart, in our hearts and compassion, unless you've been on the other side of that table, the people that it affects the most, the person you've lived with, let's say for 25, 30 or 40 years, the children that you've raised in a situation where they have to grapple with the fact that everything that they've been told about their family isn't real. Now, we all make mistakes. How many of us, I don't have the statistics of divorce. As I read to you a couple of weeks ago when we talked about the case for monogamy, because there were so many cases against monogamy and why we just can't be monogamous because we are basically bonobo monkeys and one of the four great apes. The woman I can't remember her name now that I quoted her article was saying, you know, they quote all the time that 30% report being non-monogamous, 30% of married people, men and women, and I'm not sure which, you know, one's a little bit more than the other, but she says we're not highlighting the fact that 70% are not. And see, going back to my concept in the beginning of being these bioelectrical beings, that's the flash of light. Wow, 30%, big percent, because we know that 30% of anything is quite a lot. Eat 30% of a pie, that's a lot of pie. If you have a 30% chance of winning the lottery, that's a pretty big percent. But we don't think about the 70%. You have a 30% chance of cancer. You don't think about the fact that you've got 70% that you don't have cancer. But we tend to get frightened. We tend to get scared. And then we tend to believe it is truth. That is, again, look it up in military propaganda. You can look at the coursework. And if you go to a history of propaganda, that's part of what propaganda is all about. So I'm going to read to you first this concept about the temperaments and Jesus. And then I want to read to you a little bit about this, quote, growing movement, unquote, of women who wish they'd never had children. Because they're saying this is different than postpartum depression. It's different than just occasionally wishing you could throw the baby out with the bathwater, because we all get there where we're tearing our hair out. And as I said last week, wouldn't it be great if we had people around that said, oh my goodness, of course, you know, get through this, or let's look at it from a different perspective. There isn't a support team out there. Even if there is, sometimes we only see the beauty and we think, why aren't we like everyone else? I must not like this. But all right, I don't want to minimize that. We'll get to that on probably in the end of this program. But I think it's very, very important to see where this may be going, and that we're looking at this from a singularity. We're looking at this from a frame of reference that is rather narrow. We're not looking at tomorrow brings change. We're not looking like I am not the same person today I was yesterday. We're not looking at the fact that life changes day by day, instant by instant. Children will become adults, and they could become criminals. They could become very hurtful. They could steal from their grandparents. They could do all kinds of things. That now, how many of you have had those instances? Do you regret that? Many of you will say, no, I don't regret it. I talked to someone yesterday who is actually rather had children later in life, and one of them died at the age of 34. Rather tragically, but there's no regret in never having that child. The pain is great. And the child made a choice of as they grew into adults that led them down a path that caused their death. Basically, it was a path they chose, and it led to the worst outcome, but there wasn't regret there. But this, let me go back to this first. So these things are, they do connect. These dots do connect, I promise you, somewhere, if not only in my mind. So we're going to go back to Randy Wolf and her Four Temperaments book, A Rediscovery of the Ancient Way of Understanding Health and Character, Identify Your Body's Core Humor, Discover Your Unique Strengths and Vulnerabilities, Fine-Tune Your Health, Nutrition, Lifestyle, Career, and Relationships. So it's a tall order, but it's really fun. It's fun reading. So she says here, on a much more serious note, and I want you to understand not just about Jesus, because she's talking about movie stars, she's talking about different movies, she's talking about all these different showcases of temperament and how we can envelop them both in our humor, in our way that we look at relationships to people that are very different, the way that we conduct ourselves throughout life, but also why balance is a very important thing. And how when we tend to get out of balance, if we are of predominantly one temperament or humor, we can then grow way out of balance in that particular arena, including the physical, including our health, including our relationships. So we have, on a much more serious note, consider the four versions of Jesus in the four Gospels of the Bible. In Matthew, Jesus has a commanding authority that others obey, which is choleric. In Mark, Jesus is a passionate but unappreciated helper to the people, melancholic. In Luke, Jesus is teacher and healer, sanguine. In John, he is the son sent on a mission of sacrifice, phlegmatic. It has been remarked that only with four Gospels could we get the full picture of Jesus's magnificence. It may be enlightening to consider that one reason Jesus remains so hard to pin down is because he offers a perfect balance with appeal to all temperamental types. She goes in to say then, if you discover your best friend does not match you in the classic complementary pairs, don't worry. Awareness is 90% of the challenge. Perfect complementarity is virtually impossible anyhow because of the subordinate humoral patterns and relative proportions of the influence of each. Other factors play a part too, but if you can recognize quickly your difference as well as your common values and concerns, you can avoid a huge number of small insults and larger conflicts between you. So in other words, and we'll go back, when we come back from the other side of the break, we're going to look at a couple little examples before we go into this thing about moms and kids. But remember that in your awareness and you're embracing where you might fit. Where are your temperaments? Are you out of balance? If you are more of one, you don't have to be perfectly balanced across the spectrum, but you have to understand, that's why this person drives me to distraction because they're always 5 minutes late and they don't seem to be worried about anything if I'm predominantly choleric. So we'll talk about more of that on the other side of the break. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, 573-4BREAD-4.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're listening to Dr. Michelle Live 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can also email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can look at old podcasts by logging on to breadboxmedia.podbean.com. All right, so let's go ahead and look at this temperament thought a little bit more so we can prelude into the idea of not just temperament, but temperance and patience and not making lifelong conclusions. There are those people, obviously, I'm not looking at the fringes of the bell curve. I'm not looking at those people who idealistically just are off in little butterfly land, or those people at the very, very end who are very, very disturbed, mentally ill, sociopathic, who harm their children. I'm not looking at those. And in fact, some of these articles that I will talk to you about are very careful to say this is not postpartum depression. This is not an abnormal person. This is someone who just regrets it, regrets. And again, words are powerful. And when I mentioned before about talking about people who regret their children, we oftentimes don't think of, and I likened a little bit of that onto people who in the political world who we learn these secrets about, or who step out and say something that, or in the religious world that are very brave, that they get celebrated for. But we don't often pay then attention to the spotlight, never goes on to then what are we doing in the aftermath? What do we do about the children of these people? What do we do about the wife or the husband of these people who has lived in a lie and not understood, live knowing something wasn't quite right, but not understood? Or, you know, who knows what was going on in a personal life, in any given person's personal life. But understanding that if we just only look at things in snapshots and we go through those terrible times, how many of you are married who have thought, this was not a good choice? Just what in the heck have I done? That's not necessarily regretting. It's not regretted. It is in the process of, it's a snapshot in time. And there are those of you who may regret the marriage because someone was not honest with you when they began the marriage, and they turned out to be a people, you know, I'm sure, who will relate that they may have been dating for 2-3 years. And once they get married, they find out the person's very abusive. Well, that does happen. But we're talking about more rare things that go on in life. And now this is being highlighted or showcased as a growing movement. That's a little disconcerting, a growing movement. Okay, so now going back to the four temperaments, after talking about this concept about that, what she says, what Randy Wolf says, it may be enlightening to consider that one reason Jesus remains so hard to pin down is because he offers a perfect balance, which appeals to all temperamental types. As I was reading before the break about this idea, this example, if your best friend does not match your desired or your classic complementary pair, because you can look at this whole concept of temperaments, and it's like a jigsaw puzzle. You can fit different kinds of temperaments together and say, well, this one will probably complement this one. This one will get along better with that one. But what she says is very, very important. She said awareness is 90%. 90% of the challenge is awareness. If you're aware of yourself and you don't beat yourself up or hate yourself for being who you are, or you don't beat your child up, metaphorically speaking, or yourself for not getting along with certain things in your own child or your spouse or your boyfriend or your girlfriend or your mother or your father. If you understand that they are mainly this kind of person, it will soften the edges a little bit to understand that these temperaments, these humors, can be exaggerated or they can be distorted so that we become one thing, the workaholic. That's never a good thing, because if you become one part to the exclusion of everything else, you become imbalanced. And that's just the way it happens. But if we take our frame of reference and take it out of just the I and look at ourselves embracingly with understanding and curiosity, being our own anthropologist, we also can look at others the same way, and that will open up a door, open up a window. I'm having right now a thought about someone that I knew quite some time ago, who was always felt intimidated by her little child, because her little child was a very out there, gregarious, artistic, liked to be on center stage person. And the mother wasn't. And so she felt inadequate, rather than understanding that the mother had a temperament that was more cautious, more quiet, a little melancholic, very phlegmatic, very stable. And the daughter was more in the sanguine with other compliments. So she goes on to give another example. Take the case of the choleric business person, for example, who wishes his sanguine business partner were more compliant rather than argumentative. When he remembers their shared interest in control and in ideas, they can aim to accomplish something together as partners rather than seek to control each other. It is interesting to note that once you choose a complementary humor as a best friend, you may be drawn to a different type humoral temperament for other relationships. For example, for mentors or personal coaches, you might do best with those who share your own dominant humor, assuming they are in relatively healthy balance. You may not be physically or even emotionally attracted to them, but you may discover that they have an uncanny understanding of your life challenges, habitual emotional responses, values, and ways of expressing yourself. They may be able to get through to you when others can't. This can be extremely valuable and time and cost serving as well. So she goes on, and you can take a look at the book yourself, the four temperaments, but she goes on to look at the different kinds of humoral and temperament combinations and how they seem to work. Now, again, this is not a strict blueprint. This is not necessarily a recipe. This is meant to open you up to a better balance. There are also ways that you can rebalance those different parts by connecting them with your natural world. What is it if you're melancholic, let's say predominantly? What is it that will help rebalance your whole physiology? What kinds of foods? What kinds of needs for sleep? What kinds of needs for warmth and sunshine and those kinds of things? All very natural. There's just different ways of saying it. All very good. So, I want to break a little bit and give you a little prelude before we go into something a little bit more disturbing. This is in Isaiah chapter 59. Behold, the Lord's hand is not so short that it cannot save, neither is his ear dull that it cannot hear. But it is your iniquities that have separated you and your God, and your sins that have hid his face from you, that he will not hear. For your hands are defiled with blood, and your fingers with iniquity. Your lips have spoken lies. Your tongue mutters wickedness. There is no one who calls for justice, neither is there anyone who judges faithfully. They trust in vanity and speak lies. They conceive iniquity and bring forth grief. So as Isaiah goes on, he talks about how those transgressions will multiply over time, and how these lies that we tell ourselves and these inequities we tell ourselves and the things that we do, that they will multiply over and over again. And we keep looking in the wrong places for truth, but that the Lord's hand isn't short and his ears are not dull. All you need to do is turn just a bit. And so he talks about the fact that if he puts on righteousness as a breastplate and a helmet of salvation upon his head, then he can put on the clothing. He puts on the garments of vengeance for clothing. So it's not so much in seeking the vengeance against adversaries and people that harm you, or bad choices you make, or things that you, quote, regret, unquote, or even saying later on, who knows how many of these people will start to think, you know, I don't really regret it after all. They change their minds. Our perspectives change as we get older. That there's always, we don't condemn, and we shouldn't condemn ourselves, because we are in always a transition, always a process, and our whole goal is to become fuller and more balanced as we walk forward. And part of that walking can only be done by having brightness on your path, by having a light on your path, so you have a stronger, better way to see where you're going and how to get there. We'll see you on the other side of the break. I am Dr. Michelle.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me on Dr. Michelle Live. Last segment here, we are going to get into this concept of that is being showcased as a growing movement. Now, you all know that anything showcased as a growing movement becomes a growing movement, right? People like to join the band. They like to join the marching band that goes down the street or the parade. It's a growing movement. The throngs that start off with, the one person marching down the street, and then a second one comes, and a third one, and a fourth one, and a fifth one. And you can get anywhere along the snapshot of their life and a snapshot of your life and kind of start joining ranks. And then you get enculturated in it. This is just anthropology 101, psych 101. It's really a group sociology 101. It's about groups. We like groups. And we tend to then begin to, we can get very easily out of balance. So I picked the one from Marie Claire only because Marie Claire is a magazine that hits young women, and it is it's got a fairly good age range, and it is both online and it is on the shelf as well. So it kind of hits a lot of people, from people going through grocery lines to airports, whatever. So, you know, I've certainly thumbed through them on in between flights oftentimes to see if there's something of interest to me. And so this one was written on September 28th, 2016. So just a couple weeks ago, inside the growing movement of women who wish they'd never had kids. And then the subtitle, it's unthinkable and it's definitely unspeakable. But women all over the world are coming forward to say it. I regret having my children. So the implication right there is, again, it's already understood. This is a huge movement you didn't know about. It's like all of a sudden, if you didn't know that you're supposed to be wearing stripes this year, that, and I, again, when I say these things, sometimes there's a tint of sarcasm to them. And I'm not minimizing it because I'm bringing it out. I think this is huge. And I think it's a very scary thing because you put it into the picture of not only our whole culture, but where everything else is going with the grow. And this is a growing movement of assisted death, going from the words assisted suicide, euthanasia, to a death with dignity, to assisted death, to, you know, whatever it's going to be in the future, state by state. And here's, so this article was written. It starts out, here's the thing about realizing that you shouldn't have kids, says Laura, 37, a journalist based in Los Angeles. You can't take the decision back. Laura once believed that she wanted to be a mother. She had little direct experience with children, no siblings, young enough to need tending to, no babysitting jobs. And when she and her husband decided to start a family, she wondered if she knew enough about what that meant. I asked some friends if we could get the basics from them, and they ran us through the general infant care stuff in maybe 45 minutes. In retrospect, it was laughably insufficient. I really didn't know what I was in for. Then she goes on to talk about this and that she did have some postpartum depression, but she says the cloud never lifted. She knew that there was something, a different force at work. And here's the quote. The regret hit me when the grandmas went home and my husband went back to the office and I was on my own with him. I realized that my life now, what my life was now, and it was unbearable. The more time passed, Laura felt convinced that she had made a life-altering mistake. I hated the situation I found myself in. I think the word is that I felt trapped. Then she goes on, and then they talk about it. It's a huge taboo admitting this kind of thing, but there's a growing, and this is the journalist. It's a huge taboo admitting the kind of thing, but this kind of thing, but there's a growing and largely ignored group of mothers all over the world who are confessing their regret over having children day after day as they change diapers, drive to soccer practice, and help with college applications. They fantasize about a life unburdened by dependence and free from a need of others, a do-over. The movement got its arguable start nearly 10 years ago when Corinne Maire, a French psychoanalyst, writer, and mother of two in Brussels, wrote candidly about her own regret, no kids, 40 reasons not to have children, among them being forced to adopt the idiot language of children and inevitably being disappointed by your offspring. The book was described by reviewers as a selfish and cathartic display and incredibly distasteful. But as it happens, when one person gives sudden voice to your secret inner turmoil, more women begin to timidly or boldly or both step up to the plate. In the United Kingdom, Isabel Dunton, 60, declared in the Daily Mail in 2013 that having her children, two children, was the biggest regret of her life. All right, so I'm going to stop there. She goes on to talk more and more about these different people that start stepping up and say it is a miserable existence, the biggest regret of their life. There's a Facebook page about it as well. People who've said they've always dreamed about having families, they had families, they are now in their 50s and 60s, some of them are 20, and they talk about what a regret it is and how much they hate and how much anger they have about having children. And I think, the saddest part for me, and what I want to get to, and we'll talk about this week, because this is our last segment today. So many of the reasons are these fantasies about what life would have been without the child, that somehow the regret, what they're regretting, because regret implies regret. It replies that there's something else that they did something in error that has caused the course of their life to become, as they said, unbearable. They get angry at the unbreakable bond. Many of them talk about being very good and conscientious mothers, but that they regret having their children. But instead of looking at this, and again, as I said in the first segment about people who don't put the spotlight sometimes or the caring or the compassion toward the people that are left in the wake of devastation, what about these children? What about these children? These are human beings. And to have your mother come out all of a sudden and say, I regretted having you. I regretted you were ever on this earth. Look what your life has done to me. I would have been. Well, I would like to say that all the different things I thought that I would have been in my life, with or without children, I probably wouldn't have been anyway. There are people who are talented dancers. Doesn't mean that you're going to have a life as a talented dancer forever. Some people are talented writers, and some of these people who have come spoken forward in this, quote, growing movement, unquote, they are people who are talking about things that they have no idea what would have happened to them in their lives, either good or bad. They could have been Nobel Prize winners for all we know. But the reality is that you have a child and you regret them. And you regret them so much that even as an older person, you're going to keep talking about regretting. That doesn't mean you can't be hurt by them. It doesn't mean that you haven't given stuff up for them. But that regret, I think there's something wrong in a growing movement, not just the fringes of the bell curve, the small amount. They say that only 3%, that means 97% of people, don't feel this way, but 3% of the people never waver from that feeling that they regret having children. So we're almost finished with this segment. We'll take this up tomorrow. If you have something to say about it, please email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. I think this should be concerning to everyone, no matter how happy you are or how unhappy you are. I think it's very important. And it's really good subject to come on the heels of looking at temperament, because nothing in this world is stagnant. Nothing in this world is forever. All life, by definition of life, will pass, and your feelings change and pass too. And I wonder if we don't look at the problem as having the child and maybe look at what is going on inside the person with compassion and love, the person who feels this way, why they feel this way, where is the anger and the quote, hate, 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 where is that an issue we should look at? Of course, I think it is, because when you come from a place of seething anger and hatred for something that you think was deprived of you, that in itself needs to be maybe taken a look at with love, compassion, about turning the person's glance into love and compassion for their own selves. And this is where a connection with God is a very important thing. But I'll tell you, with or without that connection, there's something up here, something afoot, and we need to look at it further. And we'll do that tomorrow. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're welcome to email me, dmlive@redboxmedia.com.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.